Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, remembering University of Findlay athletics legend, Dr. James Houdeshell. Also this morning, in case you missed it, the more than 50-year tradition known as International Night returns to UF tonight. We'll get a preview. U.S. Senate candidate Matt Dolan will join us ahead of his campaign barnstorming tour of Northwest Ohio over the next several days. It's spring break time, and Miami is one of the top destinations for obvious reasons, but the beaches are just the beginning. And we have another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, March 8th, 2024. The Lady Buckeyes will play the quarterfinals of the Big Ten Women's Basketball Tournament. Actually, started earlier this week, but the Buckeyes is the number one seed. Get a bye in the first couple of rounds, so they head into the tournament in the quarterfinals, taking on Maryland this afternoon. They have the early game of the three on the schedule today, taking on the Lady Terrapins. In case you're curious, Ohio State beat Maryland by 13 points at home just a couple of weeks ago, and they beat the Terps by 8 points in Maryland back in January. That game tips off at 12:30. Airtime is 12:15 here on WFIN. Meanwhile, the Iowa Lady Hawkeyes, Caitlin Clark and the crew will take on Penn State in the nightcap of the Big Ten women's basketball schedule this evening at 6:30. And if everything works out, the Lady Bucks and Lady Hawks could meet for a third time in the championship game of the Big Ten women's tournament on Sunday. And then, of course, who knows, they could meet up again in the NCAA women's tournament. So we'll see how it all plays out. I have to apologize, actually, because one of the things that we were going to talk about this morning was the Caitlin Clark effect. Everyone has been talking about Caitlin Clark this year. She's been the biggest story, not just the biggest story in women's college basketball, not just the biggest story in college basketball, for that matter. She's been one of the biggest stories, if not the biggest story, in all of basketball. And we spoke with Chad Lieb, who is the head coach for the Liberty Benton girls basketball team, about the Caitlin Clark effect and how all of the attention being paid on Iowa's superstar is having an impact all the way down to the high school and youth levels in terms of interest in the game. And we talked about keeping that momentum going once Caitlin Clark moves on to the WNBA, and what's Iowa going to do, and all of that. It was really a great conversation with Coach Lieb that we actually had yesterday, and I'm going to bring it to you this morning, but something happened with the audio file. Not sure what happened. Well, I know what happened. The file got corrupted. I just don't know how it happened, and the audio was unrecoverable, so unfortunately not going to be able to bring you that interview this morning. But suffice to say, he did say that there has been a big impact that has trickled down at all levels of the women's game, and it has been terrific to see. So here's hoping that they can keep that going moving forward. It's one of those things where you want Caitlin Clark to have a great game, but then Iowa to lose to Ohio State, you know. But anyway, this is kind of interesting. We're talking about daylight savings time, or daylight saving at time. It's not daylight savings time, daylight saving at time. Anyway, a new study presents a concerning link between the time change and medical malpractice. What's that you say? The American Academy of Sleep Medicine says that springing ahead correlates with medical errors. Now, I've heard stories similar to this in the past where the time change, for whatever reason, leads to more like heart attacks and car accidents and all that. But this is the first I've heard that the time change can correlate with an increase in the number of medical errors. the results of this link in this new study from the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. The current results add to the literature of the impact of sleepiness and accidents by showing that an area that one would hope would be immune, medical errors and malpractice litigation, is susceptible to this as well. This is according to Dr. Michael Scullin of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. That's a little disconcerting. If you have an elective surgery scheduled for Monday or really any time next week, might want to put that off for a few days just to be on the safe side. Speaking of medical information, I saw this on the Newswire. New study shows a single dose of LSD could provide anxiety relief. And I saw that and I said, file that under the category of duh. You ask any flower child of the 60s and they'll tell you a dose of LSD could provide anxiety relief. But apparently now we have research on this, and there's a company that is hoping to petition the FDA within the next few months to start a clinical program later this year, researching the effects of LSD. And maybe the hope is, at least their hope is, that it would be used as an actual bona fide medical treatment moving forward. See what we started with legalizing marijuana? See what we started here? Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day to get your Friday morning started. Now, here is something interesting. If you have a Labrador Retriever that is maybe a little overweight. Now, Labs are some of the most popular family pets, and a good number of them are overweight. Well, it's not your fault, apparently. Labradors may be prone to becoming overweight because they have a gene mutation that both makes them feel hungrier than they are and reduces their metabolic rate to burn off the food that they eat. So it's a double whammy. Eleanor Raffin, the University of Cambridge, talks about this in a new report. The mutation, she says, affects about a quarter of all Labrador Retrievers and also affects flat-coated retrievers, but those are the only dog breeds that they have noticed this gene mutation in. Dan O'Neill at the Royal Veterinary College in the UK says those who have overweight dogs, Labradors, should try to avoid giving treats as a way to show affection. Instead, find other ways to reward your lab, like go for an extended walk, because Labrador Retrievers love to be outside, so it'll be good for both you and your pet instead of feeding them treats on the time. So, anyway, make of that what you will. I thought it was really interesting. Labs have a unique gene mutation that makes them feel hungrier than they are in between meals and also slows down their metabolic rate. So, no. Speaking of animals, a crazy sight earlier this week in Las Vegas, where they had to shut down the famous fountains at the Bellagio Hotel because there was a rare bird that had, I guess, gotten into the fountains. Let's see. It says here on Tuesday, the resort posted that the fountains were paused as they worked with state wildlife officials to rescue a yellow-billed loon. It's a very rare bird, apparently. And good news, the bird is safe. It's one of the 10 rarest birds in the country. The Nevada Department of Wildlife said the bird was safely rescued Wednesday morning and appeared to be in good health. So they shut down the fountains on Tuesday. It wasn't until Wednesday morning they finally got the bird. The fountains of Bellagio resumed performances Wednesday afternoon. And how crazy is that? Glad the bird is safe, but it's weird. Speaking of Las Vegas, I saw this story on the Newswire, and I said to myself, what could possibly go wrong here? Las Vegas, Harry Reid International Airport in Las Vegas, is the first using an experimental do-it-yourself security lane. That's right. A new self-screening airport security program currently being tested in Las Vegas. I thought to myself, what can possibly go wrong with this? I mean, we got self-checkout in the supermarket, and people are stealing stuff from Walmart because of that. And now we're going to have self-screening airport security. Because, of course, nobody who'd want to bomb a plane would lie to the self-screening security program. Now, I say that, but in all honesty, the program is not available to everyone. It's only for those who have TSA pre-check. So presumably those people are not going to be the ones that want to bomb an airplane anyway. It says the do-it-yourself directions will tell passengers how to go through the pre-flight screening with little or no help from TSA officers, which will free them up from the pre-check line to help move the rest of the line faster. But if it works well, the program could expand to other cities across the United States. But initially you see that and you think, I'm not sure if that makes me feel safer about flying, especially since I saw this story. I don't know if you heard about this from, I guess it was earlier in the week. This story was in the news. A passenger on a Delta Airlines flight had to spend 35 minutes in the lavatory after the door got jammed in the middle of the flight. They actually had to call the pilot back from the cockpit to try and help free this passenger. And eventually, the only way this person got out was by kicking the door open. They actually kicked the door in and got the passenger out. And I'm thinking to myself, we can't even figure out the door on the bathroom in a plane. You think we're going to do self-security screening? We can't even figure out the door in the bathroom. We're going to be able to do self-screening. By the way, that passenger that got stuck in the lavatory on the flight, Delta, as compensation, offered the passenger the equivalent of $23 in air miles for their trouble. Telling reporters in a statement, we have been in contact with the customer following this situation with an offer of apology and are now investigating the situation to better understand the root cause and make any changes as needed to address the matter moving forward. So, that is good. But we're going to self-check ourselves, self-screen ourselves at the security checkpoint at the airport. I just can't see this working. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
I'm Dave James on the Ohio News Network. President Joe Biden delivered his State of the Union address last night and said the American people get back up when they get knocked down.
It's because of you America's coming back. It's because of you our future is brighter. It's because of you that tonight we can proudly say the state of our union is strong and getting stronger.
The Republican response came from freshman Alabama Senator Katie Britt, speaking from her kitchen. She said of Biden,
his reckless spending dug our economy into a hole and sent the cost of living through the roof. We have the worst inflation in 40 years.
Biden said inflation has dropped from 9% to 3% and is now the lowest in the world. Governor Mike DeWine is reacting to a new report that releasing those toxic chemicals into the air after the train derailment in East Palestine more than a year ago was unnecessary because the train cars were not in danger of exploding. Angela Ann with ONN affiliate WBNS-TV in Columbus has more.
People are still living with the consequences of this toxic derailment that uprooted their lives. DeWine's office told me that, quote, no one, not one, one single expert opined that day about there being any other scenario occurring besides either a catastrophic explosion or a controlled release to prevent such an explosion.
NTSB Chair Jennifer Homendy said Wednesday that DeWine was not given all the information he should have had. I'm Dave James on the Ohio News Network.
Really getting down to the nitty-gritty in the high school basketball postseason tournament. Pandora Gilboa will meet up with Delta St. John's this evening in the district finals. Hopewell Loudoun will tangle with Old Fort in the Division 4 district final at Liberty Benton this evening. Ottawa Glendorf and Spencerville will tangle tomorrow afternoon. Best of luck to the Titans and to the Titan ladies in the D3 girls regionals. That's Saturday evening, tomorrow evening. The Lady Titans meet Margaretta in the regional round. So best of luck to all of the teams from around the area that are still alive in the tournament. You can follow all of the action on the WFIN scoreboard page, powered by ScoreStream and presented by Owens Community College. Go to WFIN.com/scoreboard. Of course, the Trojans, unfortunately, were knocked out in the divisional semifinal round earlier in the week. That overtime heartbreaker to Northview. But still a handful of teams around the area that are still in it. Speaking of losses, the University of Findlay suffered a huge loss this past weekend, not on the scoreboard, but in their hearts. Dr. James Houdeshell passed away on Saturday at his home in Arizona. For 60 years, he served in various roles as director of athletics, baseball coach, football coach, track and field coach, and, of course, 30 years as basketball coach with 21 winning seasons and 16 postseason appearances. On the final coach's corner of the season earlier this week, John Marshall paid tribute to a legend both on and off campus.
Dr. James Houdeshell was a grad of Findlay College and a Rawson native, a member of the Ohio Basketball Hall of Fame, the Hancock County Sports Hall of Fame, the NAIA Hall of Fame, and also, of course, the Findlay College Athletics Hall of Fame. He was the president of the NAIA for a time, also served as president of the NAIA Athletic Directors Association, and served on the board of directors of the Findlay Rotary Club, was on the board of education of Findlay City Schools, and was chair of the Hancock Recreation and Parks Commission. The court at Croy Gymnasium was named Jim and Myra Houdeshell Court in his and his wife's honor. Oilers softball coach Danielle Lau.
Findlay has a great reputation of coaches staying and being here for a long time, and I know that he paved the way for that.
University of Findlay baseball coach Matt Palm, himself a coach and former athletic director in his time at Heidelberg University.
The University of Findlay lost a great member of our community, and Dr. Jim Houdeshell, he did a little bit of everything at the university in athletics, and coming from my background, I can really appreciate coaching sports, being the athletic director, and knowing the type of impact that can make on students within the university. And so it is a great loss, and we're thinking of him and his family at this time.
Current University of Findlay men's basketball coach Charlie Ernst.
I've been at Findlay for over 30 years, not counting my 4 years as a player. So if you counted those, 35 years, and he was on this campus and active for over 30 of those. So I got to know him extremely well. He's probably going to be best remembered for just being a presence, someone that people knew across the country as a leader in NAIA especially. But then I think on campus, maybe as a basketball coach, people remember him, although he coached other sports. I think basketball was his main love and his main legacy. So therefore, I was around him a lot. Really got to know him extremely well over the last 10, 12 years. I've stayed in close contact with him. I just talked to him 2 or 3 weeks ago. He called me. So he's certainly a guy that I stayed in close contact with because he had a lot of words of wisdom for me, you know, especially this season. Just talking to me about, we all have these kind of years, and reminiscing back to in the 60s or the 70s when he had this type of season and different ways he would handle that. He would always say to our players that, and I may not get this exactly right, the more you do, the more that's expected. In other words, you keep raising your own bar, and so people will expect more as you achieve more. So it's important as an athlete or as a coach that you understand that and you continue to raise your own personal bar and not be content with what you've done in the past. So I certainly benefited tremendously from having him and being part of my life and part of my basketball coaching career.
Former Findlay College athletic director, member of the university staff for some 60 years, holding 13 different positions during that time, Dr. James Houdeshell was 93.
Now, speaking of the University of Findlay, it's back after a pandemic hiatus. The more than 50-year tradition known as International Night returns tonight at U of F. It is always a really cool event, and in case you missed it last week on the program, Alex Parker dropped by the studio to give us a preview. Tell us what International Night is, first of all, for those who are maybe not familiar.
So International Night is basically a cultural festival. We celebrate diversity, not just on the University of Findlay campus, but in our community as well. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have food. There's going to be songs and music and dance. And I already said food, but food.
Yep, food, yeah.
Food.
Food.
Foods. And the best part, the food doesn't cost anything. And yeah. It's from our international students.
So that's really what is cool about this, is that the students themselves kind of put all of this together to celebrate their own heritage and share that with fellow students, with the community.
Yeah, 100%. They sign up. They decide what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. It's just a big night of celebrating differences.
And it is a free event.
It only costs as much as you want it to cost you.
Okay. All right.
We'll be taking donations, but...
Yeah.
Entry is absolutely free. So okay. Starting at 5 o'clock there at Weinbrenner.
This is really interesting for those who maybe don't know. This will be sort of an eye-opener to the wide range of international students that are on the University of Findlay campus.
Absolutely. We have over 400 international students, and they come from all over. I've met students from Ghana. I've met students from the Ivory Coast. Côte d'Ivoire, I've met students from Bangladesh, from all over the world.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. We live in such a smaller world today than what we did generations ago, and yet to still see just how different it is in different parts of the world, I think is interesting.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And seeing it in person rather than on screen, right? Mm-hmm. Like getting to that firsthand knowledge and that firsthand experience of getting to meet with these students and say they're wildly different, but they're just like me at mm-hmm. the same time.
Right. And that's another thing that is, I think, valuable about International Night is that we tend to not want to highlight our differences. We feel sometimes uncomfortable asking people about their differences, their culture. But this is an opportunity to actually do that when you're encouraged to do that.
Absolutely. Go from country to country, essentially.
Now, again, the students have been doing this themselves. This is sort of a labor of love. How long have they been preparing for this? When does this start, the preparations for this actually start?
So we actually have a committee that got started on the process back in early January, and we started having students sign up then. So it's been a good 2 months.
As we said, this is a tradition that's been going on for half a century, and I would imagine it's interesting when you look back over the years at how that diversity has changed and expanded over a half a century.
Right. So it's interesting. And actually, so it was started by Dr. Rayburn Wallen back in the 60s, and it started with his house. So it started very small, right?
Yeah.
Like it was just him having dinner with international students. And it got to the point where his wife was like, hey, we're getting a lot of students. Can we move this to campus so that you have more space? And that was the first International Night in 1969. And it's just grown ever since.
Yeah.
This year will be a little smaller because of the fact that it's coming back
After the pandemic. So this is the first one in a couple of years, right?
Yeah. So we had a virtual one a couple of years ago, but this is the first in person, like back to our roots.
Mm-hmm. And how excited is everybody for that to actually get back? Because doing it in person really is the crux of it. I mean, it's not the same.
Yeah. It's very exciting. Our students love to showcase their culture. So they're energized. They're excited. We're energized and excited. You know, this is my first year on campus. So I get to be a part of this for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And it's exciting. Folks I've talked to in the community are excited for it to come back. Folks that have never experienced it before on campus are like, this is what are we doing? This is great.
Yeah. And again, it really is interesting, especially if you've not been before, to just discover how incredibly diverse and how special and how cool some of this stuff really is. And the energy of the people wanting to share that culture with others.
Oh, yeah. 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Weinbrenner.
International night. Again, it is open to all, and the entire community welcome to check it out.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, of course, as we all know, State Senator Matt Dolan is among a trio of candidates who are vying for the opportunity to challenge Sherrod Brown for his U.S. Senate seat in November. And Senator Dolan will be making campaign stops throughout Northwest Ohio over the next several days as we get into crunch time, about a week and a half until the March primary. Senator Dolan, thanks very much for taking the time to join us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
So tell us more about this barnstorming tour that you have here coming up throughout Northwest Ohio.
Yeah, so we are actually I'm in Toledo right now. We'll actually be in Findlay at Tony's Restaurant about midday, I think, 11:30 or so. And we're out talking about, I think we're calling it the no-nonsense tour because what's happening in Washington under Sherrod Brown and Joe Biden needs to stop. And I have been telling folks, I get things done for the betterment of Ohio. I have public and private sector experience, and I work each day to make your lives better because Sherrod Brown makes our life harder. But Chris, it's also about not just talk. It's about getting results. All of us say we're fighters. All politicians say that. But I'm the only one in this race who can say I'm a fighter with results in every aspect of my professional life. Because if we're not getting results, we're just shouting. And I've got results that help Ohio. Taxes are lower. Regulations are lower. School choice is available. We protected women's sports. We invested in police. We've done the things to make Ohio a better place.
Early polls back in January, the composite of the polls from 538.com actually showed you in third place in a three-man race. Since then, the most recent polling composite has you now in second place and just 2 points behind Bernie Moreno for the lead. What has been the key, do you feel, in moving up the polls?
Well, to beat Sherrod Brown, you better have a campaign that understands how to reach out and get to voters throughout the entire state. So our key has always been we need to win the poll on March 19th. So you get around the state where we have the most aggressive ground game. We have the most aggressive get out the vote program, which is necessary to beat Sherrod Brown. We have a necessary fund to get our message up on TV. So the infrastructure of the campaign, which my two opponents do not have, is what's helping us get our message out. But our message is what's winning the day. Is I have a conservative result. I have done things that make all Ohioans better. In my time as finance chair, my budgets have been called the most conservative budgets in Ohio history. Yet they help all Ohioans. How do I know that? Chris, in a county where Sherrod Brown needs to get over 70% of the vote to win, I outperformed President Trump by 11 points in that same county. He cannot win against me because my message and what Republicans believe in, when we actually put it into practice, we make Ohioans better. We need to do that at the national level, too.
That actually kind of touches on the extension of my previous question. Again, you're 2 points down in this polling composite, which is within the margin of error. But what will be the key to overtaking Mr. Moreno to ultimately win the nomination here in about a week and a half?
Well, again, as it compares me to Bernie, I think what they're seeing with Bernie is they don't know who he is and they can't be trusted. You know, he's writing op-eds. He's standing with Bloomberg organizations prior to being a Senate candidate to advocate for a path to residency, to advocate for citizenship. Now he wants your vote in a Senate Republican primary. He's saying just the opposite. So you can't trust him when he goes to Washington. He's actually going to do what he's done. That's why it's important, Chris, when I talk and say, this is what I have done. These are facts. And this is what we need to get done in Washington. So that's the message that's going to overtake Bernie.
With respect to that, in his advertising, Mr. Moreno has attacked both yourself and Secretary LaRose for a weak stance on immigration. What's your response to that accusation?
Well, I'm the only one in this race that has consistently been saying we need to secure our border. We need to secure and seal our border. So here's the thing, Chris. A political ad can say whatever it needs to say.
Sure.
What I am talking about is what Bernie's own words were. Go look it up yourself. He wrote op-eds. He wrote articles. He went to Washington with a Michael Bloomberg organization, sat next to these guys. So it's not a matter of a political hit. It's just, hey, folks, he wants your vote now in a Republican primary. Before he wanted your vote in a Republican primary, you ought to pay attention to what he was advocating for. That's not a campaign hit. That's reality of who Bernie was before he wanted your vote.
And let me ask you this with respect to that question of immigration. Obviously, in the headlines, as we all know, there was a negotiated bipartisan deal that would address at least some of the immigration issues that was shot down by Republicans in Congress. Would you have supported that bill if you had been in the Senate?
The final bill I would not have. I support the idea of getting in a room and trying to figure it out. But here's the issue, Chris. We've had a border problem for over 30 years in our country. We have a border crisis right now under Joe Biden. And this bill, the final version of the bill that came out of negotiations, acted as if the border is just a little bit of a problem and we just have to tweak it a little bit to make it better. You can't say you're securing and sealing our border, you know, when you are continuing to allow people to cross and provide asylum hearings 2 years in advance, continue to provide aid for them, not bulking up security at the border. Instead, you're bulking up more amnesty judges. We need more law enforcement officers. We need more wall. We need more technology. So the idea that this is somehow a little tweak, that's not right. That's not right. Now, I would have hoped that they could stay in that room and come with a better bill that says we are securing and sealing the border now. I mean, I think this is the time to do it, Chris. You talked to the New York mayor, the Denver mayor, the Chicago mayor.
Yeah.
They're starting to realize that this is a real crisis for America. Now's the time to say, let's seal our border. Let's temporarily suspend immigration into our country until we get everything in line to be a secure nation. Look, we all want to be a land of immigrants, but we need to be a land of law and order first.
Let me ask you real quickly before we let you go here this morning. Obviously, last night, the president delivered his State of the Union address. I'm assuming that you saw it or at least captured some of the highlights. What was your reaction of the president's speech and the Republican response last night?
Well, being on the no-nonsense tour, we didn't have a chance to see it. I didn't get a chance to see it, but I did get to see some highlights this morning, and I skimmed the text of the speech this morning. You know what really was most disturbing to me is it was well into the speech before Joe Biden, the president of the United States, addressed the number one security issue and economic issue in our country, and that's the border. You know, he didn't even take front and center and own that. So I'm really disappointed. You know, look, That was a speech last night to go to his Democratic base. That's what that was. That was a campaign speech to say, hey, by the way, don't abandon me. That was not a speech to everyday Americans. That was not a speech that says, you know, I know you're paying $11,000 more per family since I came into office, and here are the concrete steps I'm going to take to lower inflation, lower interest rates, to get energy production back up so that creates jobs and less dependence on our enemies. You know, that's not that speech. That speech was, I'm a Democrat and Republicans are evil, so join me. That's not how you bring a country together.
Fair enough, but also to be fair, that's usually the way the State of the Union goes, especially in an election year, for that matter.
Well, you didn't ask me for a historical preference. You asked me about last night.
Fair enough. Again, State Senator Matt Dolan, among the candidates who hope to be the Republican nominee for U.S. Senate in November. He is going to be in Findlay later on today. You mentioned right around midday at Tony's restaurant. Is that right?
That's correct.
All right. Senator Dolan, thanks very much for taking the time this morning. We certainly appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you soon.
So, of course, it is spring break time. We were talking about this a little bit yesterday. You remember we were talking about the various airports where you're most likely to run into travel delays or flight cancellations during the spring break season. A lot of people are flocking to the sunny spots in the country. They're heading south, and it is probably not a surprise that Miami was named a top U.S. destination in Expedia's Spring Break Travel Outlook for 2024. It is also one of the top 10 most visited cities from Condé Nast Traveler. Not just for spring break, of course, it is always a hot destination, but that's not just because of their beautiful beaches, which is the first thing that everybody thinks about when they think Miami. And joining us this morning is filmmaker and travel journalist Michaela Guzzi. She is creator of the award-winning show, Oh, the People You Meet. So, Michaela, other than the obvious, what are Miami's biggest draws?
Thank you for having me, Chris. Yes, Miami continues to rank on all the best of lists with good reason, because there's so much more than just those beautiful beaches. I am the founder of Oh, the People You Meet. We focus on local people, local hosts that really give you that true sense of place. I had the pleasure to film with Pedro Amos, who's a Cuban-American artist that's behind Miami's best graffiti guide. He gave me a graffiti lesson. I will not be quitting my day job anytime, Chris, but it was such a fun and an immersive thing to do. It takes place in Windward Walls, and throughout the duration of the day in my tour, he also shared how street art has transitioned this neighborhood into the art mecca it is today, including being one of the must-visit destinations during Art Week, which takes place later in the year.
See, now that is exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, these are the sorts of things that I think make a destination truly a must-do spot. I mean, yeah, you've got the beaches, you've got the weather, but it's so much more than that. What are some of the other must-do activities in and around Miami?
Well, I always start with eating, because we have to do it every day, right?
Right.
And Miami is such a cultural melting pot with so many different cuisines from all around the world. There's a restaurant called Doya, which is amazing Mediterranean food. If you want to go on a Japanese culinary journey, check out Hayakawa. And my favorite thing to do is just grab a cafe con leche and just tool around Little Havana. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the Multicultural Center in Little Haiti. There's great art, there's food, culture, and dance. It's just so much fun and very lively thing to do. But a lot of people also don't realize Miami's the only city with two national parks. And there's two great operators that I love working with. One is Miami Eco Adventures, and the other is the Biscayne National Park Institute. They both have activities for nature lovers as well as families. A recent activity that I just did was to go out on a boat during sunset at the eclipse, I got to see a manatee, and then the lights come on over the city, and it was just such a cool perspective to see from the boat.
Yeah.
So cool.
Now, obviously, a place like Miami, there's no shortage of places to stay, but where would you recommend?
Well, your options are truly endless. According to U.S. Travel News and World Report, of the top 20 hotels in the United States, five of them are in Miami, and number one is the Aqualina in Sunny Isles. And I have to say, I had the pleasure to stay there once and only once, and I can totally see why they took home gold.
So, again, you can go and you can stay at the Holiday Inn or the Red Roof, but you can really go all out, and that becomes an experience in and of itself.
Absolutely. I mean, look, there's a new Lowe's Hotels in Coral Gables, and that's just four blocks from their Miracle Mile. And I, for example, I always have jet lag. I've suffered from insomnia, as do 50 million other Americans that are suffering from some kind of sleep-related disorder. And I check in to the Carillon Wellness Resort because they were ranked by Condé Nast Traveler's Reader's Choice Awards, and they were the only destination spa to be ranked by Condé Nast in Florida.
There you go.
I can speak firsthand from their Sleep Well retreat.
There you go.
Recommend checking those out if you're as sleep deprived as me.
We mentioned, obviously, Miami and Miami Beach become really popular around spring break time. What is the best time to visit?
There's no bad time of year to visit Miami. It's truly a year-round destination. One thing that you have to check out is the number of events that Miami have going on. So in March, there is the Jazz in the Gardens two-day music festival. There's the Montreux Jazz Festival. There's open house for all the architecture lovers. I can't wait to go to Hampton House. It's an exhibit at open house, and that's in the historic Overtown neighborhood. There's the Miami Open, and there's the Flamenco Dance Festival. And coming in May is the Formula One Grand Prix, and in June, the American Black Film Festival. And I mean, really, so much more.
Yeah.
But those are some great options to start with for this spring and early summer.
Going beyond the beach when we're talking about a Miami vacation. Again, travel journalist, documentary filmmaker, the creator of the award-winning show, Oh, the People You Meet. Michaela Guzzi with us this morning. Where do we get more information, Michaela?
Check out springinmiami.com. It has the extensive events calendar for all we discussed and more, plus restaurants, more hotel options, and all those great local tour guides to give you a true taste of Miami.
We will link up to that on our webpage as well. Michaela, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Pack a bag and journey on with me, Chris. I hope to see you in Miami real soon.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A Florida man has learned the hard way that security at airports do not kid around when it comes to bomb threats. They really do not have, the TSA does not have a sense of humor regarding such things. 70-year-old Alan Borinsky told police that he was trying to be funny when he was joking that he had a bomb in his bag. Yeah, that's not something you joke about at the airport. He's actually said that he was trying to flirt with a woman in line. Odd way of flirting, I think, but all of this happened last week at the Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport when two witnesses heard a passenger say, "If the bomb in my bag goes off prematurely, I apologize to your family in advance." That is not a great opening line, first of all, and even worse when you try to pull it in an airport. The witnesses, who were naturally alarmed at the statement, reported the statements to TSA, and Mr. Barinski was arrested and has been charged with making a false bomb report. No, he did not have a bomb in his bag. I was only kidding. I was only joking. We don't joke about these things, sir. I don't. No. Let's see here. More fun out of Florida. Where a woman, Akivia Reddick, age 22, is now facing charges after allegedly giving it to her ex-boyfriend with everything she had, which at the time was a bottle of Sprite and pickled pork juice. Sheriff's deputy in Lee County responded to a break-in at a Lehigh Acres home earlier this month. I guess this was last week, on the 1st of March, where he found Ms. Reddick holding a bottle of Sprite outside the home, which she then threw, striking a man later identified as her ex-boyfriend. Ms. Reddick allegedly began shouting at the victim and threatening to fight him as the officer attempted to separate the pair. There is video of this. A doorbell camera caught the whole incident. Caught the whole incident from the time the victim arrived at the residence and confronted Ms. Reddick, who began shouting at him and throwing the pickled pork and pork juices onto a sofa, damaging the couch, according to the police report. Ms. Reddick was arrested and taken to the Lee County Jail on charges of battery, dating violence, property damage, and burglary of an occupied dwelling. So she is in all kinds of trouble, assaulting her ex-boyfriend with a bottle of Sprite and pickled pork juice. Alrighty then. Well, depending on how the relationship ended, it may have been worth it. I don't know. But I can't believe that that is a relationship that didn't work out. You know, she seems so stable. Hard to believe that they couldn't make it work. Now on to Texas, where a Texas mom, was arrested after a drink she allegedly made sent her son's bully to the hospital. This is the story. Police report that the child became sick after drinking a beverage made with Gatorade, lemon juice, vinegar, and salt. The Bexar County Sheriff's Office said although the contents of the drink were non-toxic, the incident did result in a child being hospitalized. Jennifer Lynn Rossi said her motivation when they asked her, why in the world would you do this? She said she wanted to stop the kid from bullying her child. So she bullied the kid instead. She claimed her son's energy drink had been stolen the previous day, and so she made up a special energy drink for this kid. She has been charged with injury to a child. Gonna have to explain it to a judge. I think we could all relate. You know, you want to retaliate when your child is bullied, but that's really not the best way of going about it. It really is not. Also, out of Texas, now, we have a general rule in the Broken News that when people lose their life, it's not generally funny, and so we tend to shy away from those types of stories. However, every rule has an exception because sometimes the circumstances are just so odd that you just can't resist. And this is one of those stories. A man in Fort Worth, Texas, is accused of stabbing his wife after telling police she did it to herself. Officers responded last month to a reported stabbing at the home of Nathaniel and Elizabeth Rowland. A man had called 911 and claimed his wife had stabbed herself in the throat. Police found Elizabeth in the kitchen with her head nearly severed. And he claimed, Nathaniel claimed, oh, she did it to herself. Right. The county medical examiner's office investigators say there is absolutely no way that she could have done that to herself. And they also point out that she had defensive wounds on her hands. So he has been arrested, and he's probably wondering, how in the world did they figure it out? I mean, honestly, is that your best excuse? Well, she stabbed herself. She did it to herself. Yeah. I don't think so. Like I said, it's not necessarily funny, just so outrageous that he would actually try and make the claim that she did it to herself. I don't know. Some people. And finally, in the broken news, the apple apparently doesn't fall far from the tree. The 23-year-old daughter of former mob boss John Gotti Jr. has rejected a plea deal in court. Gianna Gotti and her mom, Kimberly, are facing charges of assaulting another woman at a basketball game in New York last month. Authorities say at the game, they threw fists. There's a whole, you know, knockdown, drag-out brawl. Fists were flying, and authorities claim that Gianna and Kimberly actually pulled off this woman's wig as well. Must have been quite a sight. But here's the part. Gianna was offered a misdemeanor charge if she agreed to 12 weeks of anger management classes, which you would think that's a pretty sweet deal, and she could probably use the anger management classes, but she said no. I don't need no anger management classes. Mom Kimberly Gotti was not in court on Wednesday due to some sort of medical issue, but both are due back in court on April 9th. I don't need no anger management classes. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
When local news breaks, you can hear about it on social media at lightning speed. And while getting you the information fast is important, WFIN will always present the story only after verifying with actual sourced facts. This is WFIN News Director Matt Demchek. Trust the voice that's been covering the news in Findlay and Hancock County for more than 80 years. You can depend on us to get the story right every time. On social media, 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and at 95.5 FM.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news, and the statistics that shape our lives. The State of the Union speech, of course, last night is very much in the news this morning. Reaction from all sides to the president's address, the Republican response. And I thought this was kind of interesting along the same lines of kind of politics. And it speaks to some of what the president was talking about last night during his speech. New report, government data from the National Retirement Risk Index finds that more than half of Americans over the age of 65 are virtually in the red. Nearly half of those 55 and older have no retirement savings. None. Nearly half of Americans 55 and older. Beyond that, nearly 5.3 million Americans age 65 and older, that's nearly 1 in 10, live under the poverty line. In 1975, nearly 30% of the American workforce had a defined benefit retirement plan. Now, only 13.5% do. Furthermore, 57 million Americans do not have a way to save for retirement easily. That is to say, they do not have automatic retirement deductions from their weekly paycheck. They don't even have that option. And just 13.5% of workers have a pension, as we mentioned. Senator Bernie Sanders put all of these numbers together in a report. in which he concludes, after a lifetime of hard work, Americans deserve to retire with dignity, but with our retirement system, a financially secure retirement is beyond the grasp of many workers. Now, say what you will about Bernie Sanders, and there are a lot of things to not like about his positions on the issues, but the numbers are what they are, and they are very problematic when you look at those who are at or very near retirement age with zero retirement savings and very few options to make up the difference. I mean, there are ways to try and catch up on your savings and all of that within the tax code and so on. But for millions of Americans, they just fall short. And it is an issue I think all parties on both sides are concerned about. As a matter of fact, in the senator's report, he notes that both Democrats and Republicans are equally concerned about making ends meet in their golden years, citing data that shows 81% of Americans across party lines are concerned about their retirement. And again, according to this government data from the National Retirement Risk Index, they have reason to be. My wife, Kyra, has joined us in the studio this morning. You know, today is International Women's Day.
Really?
It is International Women's Day today. And I thought this was interesting. This is a new survey commissioned by Olay.
Okay.
All right. Just over half of women say that the only time they get any me time is in the shower.
Mine's in the bathtub. Because I love my bathtub.
Same difference. Just over half say that's the only time they get any me time.
Yep.
This is a survey of 1,000 women between the ages of 18 to 35.
Yeah.
So a little bit younger than
they're
you.
They're still mommies.
But absolutely.
Yes.
79% of moms in that age group say that they feel that they need some me time right about now.
Yes. I completely understand.
And I thought this was kind of interesting from the survey. 1 in 6 women have imagined themselves winning an argument while taking a shower.
Oh, okay.
The only time they feel like they...
That doesn't even happen after 40,
now,
50, 60.
See, that's just wrong. Mm. It's not like you never win an argument. Oh, we're going to have an argument about winning an argument. See, and I can't challenge that, because if we argue about it and I prove that I'm right, it just kind of proves the point, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway.
So that's, my one thing, I just thought
that was interesting.
It's not worth it.
That is where they picture themselves winning an argument in the shower.
Pick your battles.
That's how they relate. Anyway, that's what they're thinking about when they're in the shower. So now you know.
I'm thinking about different things when I'm in the shower.
My wife Kyra is with us in the studio this morning. It is time once again for another collection of recipes from Kyra's kitchen. And we have a delicious, yummy collection, as we always do, starting with baked mozzarella stuffed meatballs.
Yes.
These are really good.
These are really good.
Yeah.
So a good friend of ours, he messaged this through Facebook to me. I was like, ooh,
well, there you
I was
go.
Like, okay, let's try
We always
try
say
this.
That if you have a recipe that you would like to see on
Please,
the program.
I will try it. I promise.
There you go.
I love this type of stuff. The easy, fun type of good stuff. So 1 pound ground beef, 1 pound ground pork, 1/2 cup of breadcrumbs, 1/4 cup of milk, 1/4 cup of grated Parmesan cheese, 2 cloves of garlic minced, 1 large egg beaten, 1 tablespoon Italian seasoning, salt and pepper to taste, and 3 mozzarella cheese sticks cut, 2 cups of marinara sauce. So preheat your oven to 375 degrees. Line a baking sheet with parchment paper in a large bowl. Soak your breadcrumbs in the milk for about 5 minutes. Add your beef and your pork, your Parmesan cheese, your garlic, and your egg and Italian seasoning, salt and pepper to the breadcrumb mixture. Mix until just combined. Divide the meat mixture into 12 equal portions. I actually made mine smaller.
Okay.
So these are like bigger meatballs. I made the smaller ones, so you could probably actually use like 4 mozzarella sticks, make them smaller, and then you can put them on a sandwich also, that type of stuff. So,
all right.
So you're still going to bake for about 25 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The larger ones, 25 to 30 minutes or until cooked through. Warm your marinara sauce in a saucepan over medium heat. And then I actually put my meatballs in the marinara, let it cook for just a little bit to kind of infuse that.
Soak all of that up.
Well, soak all that up and then enjoy.
So this is a part you actually kind of skipped over here.
Yes.
Getting the mozzarella into
So pretty much, so pretty much what you do is you kind of flatten your meat a little bit instead of making it a ball. Put your mozzarella in the middle of that, then kind of fold that over and then make your ball.
Okay. So simple as that.
Yeah, simple as that. Kind of make a little hamburger.
Okay.
There you go. Make a little hamburger. Add the mozzarella in the middle. Add your mozzarella in the middle and then roll it up.
Baked mozzarella stuffed meatballs.
Yes.
To go along with that, you have a recipe for stewed potatoes.
Yes. So 1.5 tablespoons of bacon grease or butter if you don't have bacon
any
grease.
Any recipe that starts with anything having to do with bacon, you know, is going to be good.
Yeah, the bacon just gives it a good flavor.
Yes.
1/2 cup of diced onion, 5 red potatoes, 2.5 cups of water, and 1 teaspoon of paprika, salt, and pepper to taste. So cook onion in the bacon grease in a large saucepan over medium-high heat for 5 minutes. Wash the potatoes, then cut them into pieces. Add potatoes to pan with onion, then add your water. Bring to a boil, then reduce the heat to medium and cook potatoes uncovered until tender. Pour off 1/2 the liquid, reserve some of it. You may need to add that back if needed. The remaining liquid should only cover the bottom 1/2 of the potatoes. When ready to serve, stir potatoes until desired consistency is reached. I used like a fork to kind of break it up a little bit, especially when those potatoes are cooked long enough.
Them soft, but not mushy necessarily.
Right. Yeah. So don't over stir. You still want pieces of the potato, small pieces in there, and they will continue to soften as they set, and then serve with a scoop of butter on top. So really easy and really good.
Stewed potatoes with the baked mozzarella stuffed meatballs. And then for dessert, I have a recipe for chocolate pudding cake.
Yes. So 1 box of chocolate cake mix, 2 small boxes of instant chocolate pudding, 3/4 cups of chocolate chips, 1 cup of warm water, 3/4 cup oil, and 5 extra large eggs. And large eggs are fine also.
Recipe just says extra large, but you can do
gives large. It more moisture.
Okay.
So more. Right. So preheat the oven to 325 degrees and grease a bump pan with cooking spray. Set that aside. Mix your cake mix, instant pudding powder, water, oil, and eggs until just combined with the electric mixer. Fold in 3/4 cups of the batter into the prepared bundt pan. Bake for around 1 hour or until a cake tester comes out clean. Cool completely. Sprinkle with powdered sugar if desired and enjoy.
So you've got a chocolate pudding bundt cake, basically.
Yes.
There. So the recipes for the baked mozzarella stuffed meatballs, the stewed potatoes, and the chocolate pudding bundt cake are all posted on the WFIN Facebook, on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN, right?
Yep.
We've got those posted
they're all posted.
If you have a recipe that you would like to share, as we mentioned, you can do that. They're on the Facebook page as well. Either post it there for everyone to see, or you can message Kyra directly with that. If there is a recipe that you have been looking for, would like to find, we'll put Kyra on the case. You can, again, just message or post that on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
And
always
looking for fresh ideas for recipes.
Yeah, I've kind of been looking Kyra's at Kitchen. Looking at the TikTok recipes and thinking maybe I might explore that.
We'll do some TikTok recipes.
Yeah,
all right.
I found one already that I like. And
all
I was like,
so if you
for Easter,
so maybe if you, we've got Easter coming up.
Yes.
So if there's something that you want to share or something you're looking for, by all means, reach out. The Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page is at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook, and there is also a link at GoodMornings.net. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. And of course, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, that is goodmornings.net. Also, you can connect with us on social media. You can sign up for our daily email newsletter and check out the Good Mornings podcast edition for anything you may have missed in this very busy week right there at our webpage as well. Coming up Monday morning on the program, a huge honor for 50 North being named Ohio's Senior Center of the Year. Executive Director Carolyn Kopas will explain what it means for them and the members they serve. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.